I'm probably the one that most of you contacted to register for this course. And today, as I mentioned, we have about 30 nursing homes across the country joining us for this nutritional care course, Eat, Drink, and Be Merry. As you can see from our first slide, we're pleased to be practicing what we preach. And by that, I mean that our partners, like you, are spread all around the map. There's myself and Dr. Robert Applebaum at and Kate Lindaberry, our project manager at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. Dr. Sandra Simmons at Vanderbilt University in Tennessee, and then our funder, the Retirement Research Foundation, in Chicago, Illinois. And to work together, we use much the same collaboration strategies that we'll be asking you to use throughout this course. Next slide is a picture of me, and I put that there really to let you know that for all the advantages of webinars, especially that they're time savers, there are some disadvantages, and one of them, of course, is that we can't see one another, and that can hamper communication. And so this is my weak attempt to put a face to the name, to help mitigate that one disadvantage. Another disadvantage, of course, of webinars is that in order for us to communicate effectively, we have to ask you to mute your phones, and all of you are doing a great job of that. That command is *6 to mute your phone. That makes it just a little bit difficult or creates a slight barrier to people asking questions, and I want to encourage you to try to get beyond that and to ask questions as they come up or at the end of the teleconference, because we really want to hear from you. With this material, we're going to cover a lot in a short period. Undoubtedly, there'll be questions. Your questions are probably the same ones that others have, so please don't hesitate to ask. *6 is the command to unmute your phones and ask questions. On to the third teleconference. The third slide. As I said, we've got a lot to cover today. We're at the first item, an overview of the distance learning course. Then we'll get to the heart of the teleconference, the overview of nutritional care and resident assessment, followed by a question and answer session. We'll try to end at 2:40. If questions go beyond that, feel free to hang around, and Sandy will address those. All that. There you go. Mute phones as we come in. Give me 1 second. If you have just joined us, *6, mute your phone. I know you guys are at your workplaces, and sometimes background noise is inevitable. *6 prevents it from interfering with the teleconference itself. Before we move on, I want to go on the fourth slide here. I want to give you a quick overview of the course. And here you see the calendar for the course, and this is also available on our project website, as are almost all the training documents that we're going to be referring to throughout this course. As you can see, we're going to be generally meeting, as we are today, on the third Wednesday of every month, starting at 2 o'clock Eastern Time for 40 minutes. We're going to have 5 teleconferences every month, followed by a follow-up conference 2 months later. This schedule gives us time. It's about 4 hours total of training time, but that is enough time for us to walk you through all the steps for improving, recommended steps for improving nutritional care in your facilities. Equally important, between teleconferences, it gives you time to practice what you have been learning. And this is a key principle of active learning. It's an important step to making sure that not only do you understand new material, but you can apply it. Not to worry, we are starting purposely very slow and easy with our field assignments, and that's for 2 reasons. 1, we don't want to overwhelm and scare you off. And 2, we know that if you get a chance to experiment with the procedures we're recommending, maybe tweak them a bit to better fit your nursing home and staff, you'll be more likely to adopt these improved routines for the long haul. Between teleconferences, I and our project manager, Kate Lindeberry, will call the identified liaison person at each of your nursing homes to get feedback on how you're doing. Which brings me to the next slide, and that's two-way communication. Increasingly, those of us who study nursing home care routines are recognizing that if we want nursing homes to implement more research-based elements into their practice, we need to put more practice in our research. And so we really want to hear about your experiences in your nursing homes and in your dining rooms. There's something called the uniqueness principle, which simply states that no two problems are alike, and that in turn means, of course, that no two solutions are alike. And so while we'll be recommending what's often called best practice protocols, we recognize that they may require tweaking at your end to work well in your nursing home, and we have no problem with that. But while you're learning from us, we'd also like to learn from you. That's a key step for us. And so please tell us in our coaching calls by email, phone, faxes, in these teleconferences, what's working well for you and what's not, so that together we can make real improvement. Finally, I want to let you know what I think a lot of you already do know, and that is that this course is approved for 12.33 CEs, don't ask, for nurses, and 13 for dietitians and dietetic technicians registered. These CEs reflect not only time that you're going to spend in these teleconferences, but also on the floors and in the dining rooms of your nursing homes attempting to implement the practices we're recommending. So the bottom line here is that we're asking you to make a sincere effort over the next several months to attempt to improve nutritional care practices in your nursing home and to let us know what's working and what's not, again, so that we can all make nice improvement. With that, I'm on the sixth slide, it's the seventh slide, and I want to introduce our speaker for today, our course presenter for all of our teleconferences, and that is Dr. Sandra Simmons. Among the many hats she wears, she's Associate Professor of Medicine at the Center for Quality Aging at Vanderbilt University. She is a nationally recognized expert on nutritional care management in nursing homes. Her work has been widely published, widely presented, and has influenced how this care area is evaluated by nursing home surveyors. She also recently collaborated with the Pioneer Network on a symposium and report concerning culture change in food and dining requirements. We really could not ask for a more knowledgeable expert on this topic. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Simmons.
Thank
now we're
so
on the, we're on your first slide, the next slide, objectives.
Okay. Thank you so much, Annie. Well, I have to say this is certainly much easier than trying to travel these days. The recent Pioneer Network CMS-hosted conference was actually in the Baltimore, D.C. area and had to be canceled due to weather, unfortunately, but they're going to be posting everything from that conference on their website. So once I get updated information about that, I'll share that with the group in a later session. The objectives for today's session include to review research findings from our own work as well as the work of others related to nutritional care issues in nursing homes, to review two evidence-based nutrition interventions for improving residents' food and fluid intake, although keep in mind that I'll just provide a cursory review of these nutrition interventions today because a more detailed review will be the focus of sessions 2 and 3. And finally, to also review assessment guidelines for identifying residents with low food and fluid intake. And this third objective is primarily related to your field assignment for the next month prior to the next session. So nutritional care issues in nursing homes, as I'm sure everybody who has joined this call and works in the long-term care setting is already aware, the prevalence of unintentional weight loss is considered a quality indicator for nursing homes, as it's reported on the minimum data set. The major questions that we have tried to address in our work is how do you actually monitor nutritional care quality in a valid and reliable way? What are effective nutrition interventions for frail older adults in the long-term care setting? Meaning, what are interventions that actually improve residents' food and fluid intake, nutrition and hydration status, as well as weight loss outcomes? And equally importantly, how much staff do you need to actually consistently provide these interventions on a daily basis?
Next slide. Next slide. Slide 10.
So we're on the slide of how do you monitor care quality. Well, several of these bullet points will look familiar to all of you. The typical aspects of nutritional care that you see in a resident's medical record include percent eaten documentation, where the estimates of how much a resident is eating during meals is documented for each resident in each meal time period, whether or not feeding assistance care is needed, and if it's been provided as needed or during each meal time period, whether or not a resident has an order for an oral liquid nutrition supplement such as Ensure or Resource, and how often this the supplement is being provided, and possibly even the provision of additional foods and fluids between meals, and of course residents' monthly weight values. But the primary information source for all of these aspects of nutritional care quality is typically just what's documented in the resident's medical record chart documentation. Next slide, which would be slide number 11. Unfortunately, our work has shown that chart documentation for all of these aspects of nutritional care is not only erroneous, but it's also biased, and biased in the direction of consistently overestimating nutritional care quality. For example, when we compared independent estimates of meal intake to what was documented for percent eaten in residents' medical records, we found that nurse aide estimates in the medical record on average overestimate intake by 15 to 20% or more. And in addition to that, there's a systematic bias in that the lower the intake for an individual resident, the more likely there will be an overestimated intake. In terms of feeding assistance care provision, we did a study in 16 different long-term care facilities, and in every case, residents who were rated by staff on the most recent MDS assessment as requiring staff assistance to eat, and or those residents who had experienced a recent weight loss event, consistently had documentation in the medical record that feeding assistance was provided either as needed or at every meal time period. In contrast, when we had trained research staff actually observe scheduled meals and whether or not residents received assistance, only 40% of the time did they actually get more than 5 minutes of assistance. So a huge difference between what was actually provided on a daily basis versus what was documented in the record. For supplement delivery, most residents who have a supplement order have an order to get a supplement 2 to 3 times a day. And again, in practice, based on observations, we found that residents with a supplement order on average actually get a supplement less than once a day. In terms of additional foods and fluids between meals, we found that such items are rarely documented at all in the record and also rarely offered by staff, again, on average, one or less times per person per day. Related to monthly weight values, this is the next slide, slide number 12. Nursing homes are required to document at least monthly. Some might do it twice a month, but at least monthly body weight values for each resident. We conducted a study in a sample of 4 nursing homes where we compared nursing home staff documented weight values to research staff weights across a 12-month period. We used the same facility scales that nursing home staff used to weigh the residents, but research staff used a standardized weighing procedure. meaning that we conducted the weights at approximately the same time of day and in the same manner during each monthly assessment. We actually have a description of the standardized weighing procedure as well as the form on the project website. It's under the other form section. When we compared our own weights using the standardized weighing procedure to what was documented by the nursing home staff during the same monthly measurement point, we found that nursing home staff monthly weights were consistently higher than research staff weights. So again, a bias in the direction of overestimating the resident's body weight. That missing monthly weight data was common, and that because nursing home staff weight values were consistently higher than what our weight values were, there was on average a 1 to 3 month delay in the identification of a weight loss for individual residents. Slide number 13. So due to the inaccuracy in the medical record for all of these different aspects of daily nutritional care, an independent information source to assess care quality and identify at-risk residents is really critical to improving care. So related to that end, we've developed standardized observational protocols that can be implemented during and between meals, and these protocols allow an accurate measurement of residents' food and fluid intake during meals, feeding assistance care provision during meals, whether or not alternatives are available to the served meal for residents who are eating poorly, and whether or not staff are providing additional foods, fluids, and supplements between meals. You know, when they need to for individual residents. Next slide. The standardized observations during meals also provide an opportunity to identify a whole host of other related issues. When we get to the form itself, you'll find that these other aspects of care are not explicitly documented on the form in their own columns, but once you gain experience doing standardized observations during regularly scheduled meals, you'll find that it's an excellent opportunity to notice many other aspects of care that are important for improving care. One is resident complaints about the food, individual residents' food preferences, their likes and dislikes, the potential need for assistive devices such as plate guards or large-handled utensils that might allow a resident to eat more independently. Evidence of chewing or swallowing difficulties that might warrant a referral for further evaluation that have not previously been noticed or diagnosed. The appropriateness of the served diet orders. In our observations, there was about a 15% error rate between the type of diet order that a resident had in their record versus the meal tray that they were actually given. And this included regular diets being served to people who were on, you know, mechanical soft or some other, you know, pureed or altered textures, and vice versa. You know, people who are supposed to get regular diets who got a, you know, a pureed tray. So the error went in both directions. Another thing that's really noticeable during meal times is excessive lethargy or sleepiness of the resident, where a resident is actually sleeping through a significant portion of the meal, and those residents obviously tend to eat very poorly and, you know, might need more attention in terms of what types of medications they're on and the timing of those medications. If, you know, if sleepiness or lethargy is a potential side effect, that those are, you know, that giving those meds, you know, immediately prior to mealtime is probably not a good idea. And then just general environmental factors, especially for residents who are eating in the dining room, in terms of lighting, the level of noise, just the general ambiance and the extent to which it's conducive to a pleasant dining atmosphere for the resident. All of these things are incredibly noticeable once you get in the habit of routinely monitoring mealtime care through structured observations. Next slide. So what are effective nutrition interventions for older adults in the long-term care setting? Well, there are many factors that contribute to poor oral intake and weight loss risk in nursing home residents, including medical factors such as their diagnoses, routine medications that are very common for this population that have appetite suppressant side effects, residents' physical ability to feed themselves, psychological factors, the biggest one being depression or depressive symptoms, and physiological factors. There's reduced taste, thirst, and smell sensations with age. So all of these factors can certainly contribute to a resident's eating poorly and being at risk for unintentional weight loss. However, we found in our work that the adequacy and the quality of the assistance that staff provide during meals as well as between meals not only represent key effective nutrition interventions, but ones that are most malleable to intervention and ones that yield the largest effects on improving daily food and fluid intake as well as nutrition and hydration status and weight loss outcomes. Related to the adequacy of mealtime assistance, slide number 16, we found in our descriptive studies where we've just observed usual nursing home care that residents who are in need of mealtime assistance, meaning that they're rated by staff as requiring staff assistance to eat, in practice receive an average of less than 10 minutes of staff help per person per meal. And that 70 to 80% of a typical long-term care population actually meets the minimum data set criterion of low intake, meaning that they're consistently consuming less than 75% of most meals, or this is the least 25% or more of food uneaten at most meals. What's more, when we've observed usual long-term care practices during meals, we found that when staff do provide assistance, that it's mostly physical feeding assistance with little to no verbal cueing or social stimulation to enhance the resident's independence in eating. Next slide, slide number 17. We've also found that at the higher risk group are actually the residents who are rated by staff as independent or requiring only supervision or limited assistance to eat. So if you looked at the MDS eating dependency item, these would be residents rated from the 0 to 2 category. And the reason for this is that these residents are physically capable of feeding themselves. So because of that, they receive little to no staff attention during meals beyond just simple meal tray delivery and possibly meal tray setup. But many of these people actually eat less than 50% of most meals, and the low intake in this high-risk group typically goes unnoticed by staff because they're residents who are capable of feeding themselves. In contrast, and somewhat surprisingly, at least to us initially, was that the lower risk group, I'm on slide 18 now, are actually those residents who are rated by staff as requiring extensive to total assistance to eat. So again, the MDS eating dependency item, those rated as 3 or 4. You know, these are residents who are physically incapable of eating independently. You know, they really can't eat or drink, you know, little or nothing at all without staff assistance. And these are the residents who the staff really focus their attention on during meals, and they receive on average 15 to 20 minutes of assistance per person per meal. So the problem with this group is not that they don't receive any staff attention at all. 15 to 20 minutes is usually not enough, but it's a lot more than what the other people get. You also have to be concerned about the consistency of the assistance. It can be problematic, meaning that they might get assistance at breakfast or lunch, but not dinner. And you also have to be concerned about the quality of the assistance for this group, meaning that you don't want staff to just be providing physical assistance to eat without also talking to the resident while they're doing it. Minimally, they should be telling the resident what they're giving them a bite of or a drink of. You know, there should be some verbal communication, even if the resident is severely cognitively impaired and unable to communicate. Next slide. we've found that improving the adequacy of mealtime assistance as well as the quality of mealtime assistance, that we can get approximately 40 to 50% of the residents who have low intake to consume significantly more in response to improvements in mealtime assistance, improvements that enhance their independence in eating, that promote social interaction, and that complies with some of their preferences to the greatest extent possible. Again, I'll be describing our mealtime feeding assistance intervention protocol in much more detail in the next session. The next slide, and slide number 20, we've also found that most of those residents who do not respond to mealtime assistance will respond to offers of additional foods and fluids or snacks between meals. When items are offered 2 to 3 times per day between meals, in conjunction with staff assistance and encouragement to promote consumption, and again, offering the residents choice and complying with their preferences, will also be describing this between meal snack intervention in more detail in a later session. Next slide. I just want to share our descriptive study results related to what usual nursing home care typically looks like between meals. Again, we found that based on our observations between meals that residents are offered additional foods and fluids between meals once a day or less per person, that most residents are offered just supplements or water, so there's very little choice or variety in what we've seen. And there's also little to no staff encouragement to promote consumption. So that if items are given between meals, they're typically just, you know, given to the resident or dropped off at the resident's bedside, and the staff aren't really sticking around to actually encourage consumption of those items. So the result is that between meal caloric consumption is usually very low for a typical nursing home resident, with an average of less than 100 additional calories a day from between meal foods and fluids. Next slide. So overall, we found that 90% of residents with low food and fluid intake will improve their intake significantly either in response to mealtime assistance or between meal snacks, and that maintenance of these two nutrition interventions over time does result in improvements in total daily caloric intake, body mass index, and weight loss outcomes. Next slide, slide number 23. So why are these nutrition interventions not provided consistently by staff? Well, there's a few key reasons based on our research findings. One, there are a significant number of residents with low intake who are not identified by staff as even needing staff attention. Again, many of these residents are those who are independent in eating. They're just poor eaters. We've also found that a short intervention trial allows better targeting of which intervention approach is best suited to an individual resident. As I mentioned, not all residents will respond to mealtime assistance, but most of those who don't do actually respond to offers of additional foods and fluids between meals. So part of making the most of your staffing resources is figuring out not only who needs staff attention during meals because they're eating poorly, but who is going to benefit the most from the additional staff attention, so that your staff aren't wasting their time trying to provide assistance during meals to someone who really would respond better to offers of snacks between meals. And finally, the availability of adequate staffing resources, again, we'll be talking in a later session about how to make the most of your existing staffing resources. We've done quite a bit of work in this area, so we have a lot of suggestions to that end. But it's always a concern, you know, how do you effectively and efficiently utilize the staff that you have to provide care to those residents who really need it. Next slide. So related to your field assignment, identifying residents with low intake. Well, the low intake criteria, again, the minimum data set definition for low intake is basically eating less than 75% of most meals, or the least 25% or more of food uneaten at most meals. We have found that a more clinically meaningful criterion is consuming less than 50% of most served meals. The less than 50% is more clinically meaningful in terms of predicting subsequent weight loss over time, and especially in facilities where there's, you know, facilities on average are required to provide 2,000 calories a day for someone who's on a, it's just a regular, you know, a non-caloric restricted diet. But facilities do vary. You know, some facilities really, they might offer 2,500 to 3,000 calories a day during their regularly scheduled meals. So it really depends on the individual facility. So the 50% criterion is tends to be more clinically meaningful in that regard. In terms of how to identify the residents who are at risk for weight loss due to low intake, remember that the bias in your chart documentation is overestimation. So anyone who has chart documentation of percent eaten values that are less than 50% are really poor eaters, because your chart documentation is, you're not really missing the poor eaters in the sense that the ones that you have to worry about are those people who consistently have chart documentation of 75 to 100% eaten. Those are the people who, there's a substantial number who actually have low intake, but the chart data is not reflecting that. Also remember that residents who are rated on the MDS eating dependency item as 0 to 2, that's completely independent or requiring only supervision or limited assistance, are actually the ones who are more likely to eat less than 50% and receive little to no staff attention during meals. And also remember that between meal consumption is usually very low, which means that it's more important to focus on meal intake, and you can actually look at meal intake as a good indicator for whether or not someone's overall intake is low, without necessarily also having to monitor between meal consumption. Next slide, slide number 25. So observations during meals, some general guidelines. This is related to utilizing our standardized form. First, we recommend that you select residents in close proximity to each other. So residents who dine at the same table or at least in the same dining room area. If you have a substantial number of residents who are dining in their rooms, which is common in a lot of facilities, especially during the breakfast and dinner meals, then you can choose residents who are on the same hallway for observation. We recommend that you start your observation with a small group of 3 to 5 residents. Again, those who dine in close proximity to each other. Ideally, you should observe each scheduled meal once, meaning one breakfast, one lunch, and one dinner. They don't necessarily have to be on the same day, but we would recommend that they're within the same week. We say each scheduled meal once because residents and staff assistance does vary from meal to meal. We found that the breakfast and dinner meals tend to be more problematic than the lunch meals in terms of poor oral intake and the quality of the assistance, primarily because the breakfast and dinner meals are the meals during which more residents eat in their rooms as opposed to a dining room area, and the dinner meal in particular because evening staffing ratios are such that there are fewer residents in a typical nursing home during the evening shift than there are during the day shift. And of course, using a standardized form such as the one that we're providing on the project website. Next slide. For intake estimates, as you're doing your observations, it's worth noting that the regulations actually do not require nursing home staff to actually document daily percent eaten values for every resident during every mealtime period. Facilities have gotten in a habit of doing this so that they can accurately fill out the MDS low intake item and do other nutritional care assessments. And in fact, the new MDS 3.0, I'm told, will not have the low intake item. That said, there still remains a tremendous value in periodically estimating resident intake through observations during meals to identify residents at risk for weight loss due to low intake. One of the biggest problems that I've seen in long-term care is that staff tend to wait for a significant weight loss event to occur before they really aggressively start looking at nutrition intervention. And identifying residents who are eating poorly prior to the weight loss episode occurring allows you to be much more proactive and intervene at a much earlier time period. In that sense, doing observations periodically to yield accurate information about who's eating poorly and who isn't is an incredibly valuable tool for early intervention. Getting back to our clinically meaningful recommended criterion, what you really want to know is whether or not a resident's intake is consistently more or less than 50% of the served meal. Next slide. I believe Annie emailed a copy of our mealtime observational tool, and it's also available on the project website. You'll notice at the bottom of the tool, first, that the tool itself is set up to allow documentation for up to 5 residents, because we found that that's a very comfortable number of residents to observe at any one point in time. And at the bottom of the tool gives you space to actually list each food and fluid item that's given to the resident during a particular mealtime period. The way that we have conducted intake estimates, we found it very beneficial to actually list each of these items and estimate percent consumed for each item separately. It allows you to see what fluid consumption is separate from food consumption, because some facilities do track that separately. You'll also notice on the form that we have a separate documentation at the top of the form in the last 2 columns for whether or not a supplement is given during the meal and the amount consumed of the supplement, as opposed to counting this as part of the overall meal intake. We do this because supplements are really not intended to be given with the meal. We found that for residents who have an order to get a supplement 2 to 3 times a day, that order is often interpreted as just putting a supplement on the resident's meal tray 3 times a day. And unfortunately, what happens is that the supplement no longer serves as a caloric supplement and instead serves as a substitute for the calories from the served meal. In that we have observed nurse aid staff to essentially provide the supplement to the resident in lieu of providing good quality assistance and encouragement to promote consumption of the served meal. So we keep that documentation separately. In our studies, we have excluded caffeinated beverages from our fluid intake, such as coffee and hot tea. That's really optional. And what's more important is that however it's done, that it's done consistently between staff. So if you decide within your facility that sodas and other types of caffeinated beverages are, count for a lot of fluid intake during or between meals, then you can certainly choose to count those items. Then you add all those individual percentages and then simply divide by the total number of items on the tray to get the total percent consumed estimate. We found that this is much more reliable and yields a lot less error in estimation than more more complex estimation, such as having the entree, you know, the main entree count as 40% and the salad count as 20% and the dessert count as 10%. And in short, the more complex the estimation, the more error you're going to have and the more variability you're going to have among staff in terms of the number that they come up with. And as part of your field assignment, I recommend that when you do your own estimates of intake using our form, that you then compare your estimates to what was documented in the record for those same residents and mealtime periods so that you can get a sense of how accurate or erroneous the chart documentation is in your own facilities.
Sandy?
Yes.
We'll have to watch the time.
Okay, yeah, I'm on the last couple of slides. Again, just some on slide number 28, just some additional tips on improving the accuracy of your intake estimates for your staff. We give our research staff pocket calculators. We don't expect them to do this math in their head. We have also found that facilities have had good luck with designating staff who are responsible for estimation during meals as opposed to having nurse aides do it who are busy doing many other tasks. We've also done training with digital photos of residents' meal trays before and after the meals as a staff training tool to show staff examples of what a meal tray looks like when somebody's eaten less than 75% or less than 50%. Its estimation definitely needs to occur at the completion of the meal and not several hours later, which is often the practice, meaning that nurse aides will, you know, wait several hours after the meal before they do the estimates and documentation and rely a lot on their own memory. And the kitchen and the dietary staff need to know to leave the trays out long enough that staff have time to do the estimation. So for slide number 29, your field assignment is to select 3 to 5 residents who dine in the same area for observation during a breakfast and or a dinner meal. And I'll leave the resident selection criteria up to you. I've given some examples of criteria that we have found to be meaningful, but you can decide, you know, what makes the most sense for your individual facilities in terms of how you select residents for observation. And, of course, slide number 30, use our standardized mealtime observation form to determine intake and feeding assistance care provision for the 3 to 5 residents that you target for observation. I will say again, between meal observations, even though we've also provided this form, are less important than mealtime observations because residents get additional items between meals so infrequently, and their between meal consumption is really low as a result. Slide number 31, we've found that the observation time should take you at approximately 30 to 45 minutes for a given mealtime period, although basically all the assistance that a resident is going to get is going to happen within the first 15 to 20 minutes of the meal. So really you can get the information that you need to get certainly within the first 30 minutes unless the person is a slow eater and you need to wait to get their final intake estimates. It's also important to count all types of assistance provided by any type of staff. We give staff credit for verbal cueing, meal tray setup, physical help, and even social interaction during the meal. And any other observations that you feel are noteworthy, you can use the comment section for, including whether or not staff offered any types of alternatives to the served meal. I think I'll stop right there and let Annie take over.
Yeah, you know what? We'll go to question and answers. I recognize that we're a little bit over time. If you have to go, you have to go. But we will hang around for questions. You can unmute your phone with #6 or hit your mute button. Don't be shy. We would love to hear if you have any questions. Any questions? Okay. Email us if you do. The final slides, I just want to remind everybody that our next teleconference is going to be March 17th at 2 p.m. Before then, we're going to check back with you on the field assignment, see if you've got any questions at that time after you give it a try. We're going to be happy to help if you have questions. In the meantime, email me, email Sandy. Her email address is on our website. If you haven't done so already, please take a few minutes to complete our pre-training quiz requirement for CEs, which is on the website. If you have completed it, just assume that I have it. You guys have done really a great job of responding to that. I have a lot of quizzes returned to me. Reading assignment will be posted to the website. It includes two chapters, which are really brief. They really shouldn't be called chapters. Two steps in our training manual. Just reinforces what you've heard today, gives a slight, so that, you know, it's pretty much what Sandy has said in writing for you. That's it. Again, any questions, we'd be happy to take them. Otherwise, thank you for joining us today, and have a great rest of your week.
Yes, I just wondered if you will be continuing ed for the nursing school.
Yes. If you... I don't know that nurse aides do not approve specifically for nurse aides. I'm happy to give a certificate of completion for the hours for nurse aides. We really want nurse aides in on this. I mean, you should too, because it's going to make your jobs easier. They're going to do the lion's share of the work. So, will that suffice?
I'll check into that, but thank you.
Yeah, let me know what you need, and I will do my best to provide it.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions? Thank you, Sandy.
Oh, thank you. Should I stick around for a few more minutes?
Yeah, yeah, you can hang on. I think most
people are signing off.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, they can. They have my email
address. Is that a question from someone? No. Okay. Terrific.
Okay.
We'll see you at the next one.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.